Okay, we will start, and I just want to briefly go through and outline what we've got at the moment. I will say that we put these screenshots together in a couple of hours just before we went to the last LAMS conference, and it still horrifies me that we are still using these screenshots all this time later, because there's some obvious things that scream at me now. I don't know what I was thinking at the time, and still they're there, so I must remember to edit them. But the activity planner came about originally because we did see the need that in the higher ed area particularly, a lot of people were teaching that were never trained to teach. The other thing is that we've now found that there's this huge area of very experienced lecturers who are being asked to incorporate ICT into their teaching and truly have no idea where to start. So those particular areas became the drivers for me starting to think that we needed something. We really needed a tool that was an educational developer, I guess, sitting beside the people. But these people didn't go to educational developers, were often frightened of educational developers, or the developers weren't available in that just-in-time environment. So this sort of started to formulate as an idea. So what we've got, and bear in mind it's very rudimentary at this point, is just a screen that those of you who know LAMS well will recognise is that first open screen. You've got an extra tab at the top, and currently when you open LAMS you'll have my profile, author, and my groups, and you'll see there's an extra one, the planner option. And if you clicked on that you'd get this screen. Now at this point we just randomly picked three areas in which to move. And you'll see there's teaching style, and we actually meant teaching strategies, and that's one of the things I would have really liked to change. Teaching for a specific purpose. So if you had wanted to set up something like a discussion group, online discussion, you could have something like that there. And then discipline specific. And I think that as a third option has become increasingly clear to us that it's really, really important. And I'm not sure that that can really be justified educationally. There is some people in certain faculties that say we don't do it that way, we do it in the sciences, we do it this way. And it is true to DISH traditionally they have done it this way. I'm just not sure that that is the only way to teach that. And if you look at excellent teachers in their area, they don't always go that way. So I'm not totally convinced that the discipline-specific area is going to be always that way, because that's the only way it can be taught. So what the person would do is they'd select one of these particular areas, and this is infinite. We could put in whatever areas here we'd like, but just for this example, we'll assume that they've clicked on teaching style, and then that would open up to a number of what has turned out to be teaching strategies. So for example, if they thought, well, gee, I might like to find out about exploring alternative perspectives, or they could look at the list. And this is where I see the parallels coming in with Phoebe, because we've got this thing beside each of those options, why would I use this? And what we were looking at is various levels of just-in-time help, context-sensitive, but it was varying degrees. So you've got this first paragraph of very brief information. If they need more, they click, and it gradually just moves on as the information unfolds in a variety of depth. And that's where I saw with Phoebe, the same sort of thing was happening. The scaffolding and the information was there. There's a certain series of teaching strategies that seem to have a generic pattern about them. Problem-based learning was one of them. Role play is another one. They all seem to have similar characteristics regardless of the content. So this is where you'd come to click on that, find out about it. So it did have this educational or instructional or professional development aspect if you chose to go there. But if you knew what you were doing, you could just click your way through. If we clicked on the alternative perspectives, inside that, it might offer you also a number of alternative scenarios. Again, that's an infinite list, but we've got to find that balance between complexity and detail and what the people want at the time, because we're mainly assuming that the people that would be using this would would most likely be fairly new to this particular area. And then finally, once they've read about it and made a choice to the type of activity they want, instead of then designing the activity in an online environment themselves, it would be built, the generic template would be pre-built, so that the structure of something like problem-based learning, or in this case that's illustrated exploring alternative perspectives, has already been put in place. And you could probably argue all day about whether this should be before that, or in normal circumstances it would be better to introduce something earlier or later. But for the person who's trying this for the first time, they're the decisions they don't have to make at this point. It's already there for them. So the introduction is there, it's ready for them, and all they have to do is put the text in for their particular application at the next point. And then there's also a help screen there to give them an indication of the sort of information you're expecting them to put in there, and some examples, so that if they're really novices, they can look at the example and modify it to what suits them. As they move through, the pattern is there. They provide the website that's appropriate, for example, and just work through. So all we're asking them is for the specific content to their specific context. Providing help with these help screens, need help as they go. So if you didn't need help, you could very quickly move through this, but if you were caught, the just-in-time context-sensitive help is there. So what would happen then is once they filled in all this information, they just click save, and they would have a LAMS sequence, as everybody is used to seeing LAMS sequences in Author. So it was ready built. Now the beauty of that was that if they ran it or saw it in preview and then thought, well, I really don't want this bit there, I want to edit that, then they were able to do it because of the editability ease in LAMS. And that's the feature that I really think we have to maintain. Even though we've set the structure up and at this point here, it's all set in concrete, as soon as that save button and it moves to Author, they do have the ability to start tinkering with it, change it. So that's just a rough outline of the templates at this point. And you'll see that it really is a very much a software front end to what a lot of you have been describing is coming from the other direction. So, any thoughts? Questions? Did you want to add anything, James?
The only thing I'd add to that is that what we have in mind here is that this is a process of selecting a design and then quickly editing it, fine, but we hope eventually to even create the back-end system so you could create your own one of these. So if you said, I've got my own decision tree, my own device, advice, my own set of pre-built templates that I would like to use with my people, that you know, you could create your own one of these. It's not that we LAMS will give everyone the planner. It's more we want to get something going just so we can start using it, but hopefully in time have an infrastructure where a person without programming skills could build what you just saw then of their own. And perhaps I would even hope that we might get to a point where we would even share whole planners with each other. You know, I could say, here's my psych planner, and you can see the assumptions I made and the things in it, and you go, oh, that's interesting. You know, here's my teacher-trainer planner, or using discipline examples, but it doesn't have to be. It could be, here's my planner for asynchronous tasks you could do between face-to-face tutorial sessions, you know, and have a whole set of different designs that suit the things you might do online over a week-long period in between two face-to-face classes. I mean, that could be another kind of planner. And so, viewed in that way, we could have many of these things, you know, with different starting assumptions and different decisions and templates within them. And hopefully, lots of people would create whatever they think would be a good way to put it together. And then by, you know, obviously getting experience with those, we'd start to get a feel for what works, what doesn't, or what works in certain contexts and in others. So that's that's more of the longer term goal. We're probably not going to be ready to do that for, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a year before we can give you your own editing interface to do all of that. but we will certainly be creating a few quick and dirty ones of these that, you know, that work as the way you've just seen, so we can get them out in the field, I would hope, in, you know, a small number of months would be my kind of hope. Whenever I say these things, I always get them wrong. But anyway,
I'm just thinking how relieved I am that Ernie's out there at this point.
Yeah, Ernie'd be sort of tackling me to the ground. But yes, Martin.
I think that kind of contextual data you talk about is the kind of key to it, really, because that's when people really find what they want from it. So it's, for you, what is a good introductory activity in chemistry. For someone else, is actually a good exercise to do with students who are really miserable or something. You know, you kind of don't know what that context is, but that's actually when reuse becomes important, when you find something that suits your need. And that's kind of when I knew learning objects were going to fail, when they started talking about having secondary metadata that you had to kind of input. But actually, that's the stuff that's important, but you get it from this kind of user-generated content and stuff. So the point of my rambling is there's a kind of chicken and egg problem here. You don't get that data until lots of people start using them, but people don't start using them much until they've got that kind of contextual data that helps them find the thing they want. So I think getting over that is kind of a real hurdle.
I think the interesting thing is that this was, when we first started looking at it, the most simple iteration of this that we could imagine. Hawking this around a little bit now, I've realised that this is still far too complex for some people. We've got to put the content in for them as well. So there is that very, very first level, and Debbie called it a black line master, and I don't know if you had that concept in the UK, but it's for teachers who can't be bothered really doing anything, and they just slap something on the photocopier, and it's called a black line master, and it's all just there ready for them. They put it on the photocopier 10 minutes before they walk into the class, and 30 copies of something they use regularly comes out. And I think we're going to reach the point where we have to have that level as well, but still maintain that editability. So this, I don't think we can justify that as calling that a planner, though, because what are they planning? Nothing. We've done it for them. But this point here, I think, is still has educational justification here.